Hello and welcome to Season 4 of Somerset Stories, the podcast which explores the lives of the people who live, work and create in Somerset. My name is Lewis Webb, and each week I get to share the stories of some of the inspiring, creative and successful individuals and families that make this beautiful county their home. We're back for a new season with 14 fantastic guests lined up ready to share their lives and insights. Plus, we've got a brand new game to play to test their Somerset knowledge to the limits. As ever, your comments, reviews and feedback are always appreciated. And if you'd like to send us a message, you can email hello@somersetstories.com. My guest this week is the current Mrs. Somerset Galaxy, Dionne John. As an advocate and campaigner for heart health awareness, Dionne has represented Somerset in multiple pageants over the last 5 years and has used her position to raise awareness and funds for local causes and cancer charities. She's due to compete at the UK final at the end of November, and we chatted earlier this month about her journey, her charity work, and her own family life. Dionne, welcome to Somerset Stories.
Hello there.
Regular listeners will know that occasionally I ask some guests their recommendations for what would they do for 24 hours in their local area. And I know you're based in Taunton, so why don't you kick us off with a day in Taunton? What would you get up to?
Oh, that's quite easy, actually. Yeah, day in Taunton, I would definitely visit one of my favourite restaurants. That is definitely Tristan's, which is on East Reach. They have got fabulous staff there, and the food is incredible. A lot of the times in Taunton as well, they do lots of things. If you look up Go Create in Taunton, they do lots and lots of like interesting things, like trails, like heart trails, toad trails around the local area. They did Taunton Pride. Also, I'm quite an old funny daddy like that. Actually, I like to go to the market and eat lots of cheese. I love cheese, so or go down the high street, and they do loads of cheeses down there. There's always like little markets everywhere. You know, it's just a really nice town. Everyone's really happy, and you know, I enjoy it. A good day out in Taunton's everywhere, really.
You moved to Taunton when you were 8, I think. What memories do you have of coming to Somerset?
Okay, so yes, I remember moving here when I was quite young. I remember starting school, and my dad was still working in Mablethorpe, and I used to always, my memories are when he used to come down while he was still working there, he always used to bring me a Fraggle. I don't know if anybody remembers the Fraggles when they were younger. So I was delighted when he brought me Red Fraggle and Gobo and Wembley and all that sort of thing. I've got really fond memories of Taunton. I went to ABC school. You know, it was great. You know, I've just always liked it since I've been here, and I've just made lots of friends here, and you know, my family's still here, so I really like it.
What was it that brought your parents to the area?
It was definitely work. My dad used to work at the Greyhound Inn, and that's why we moved down here. And so it was just moving from Mablethorpe really for work. And there's more work opportunities than the little beachside town of Mablethorpe. And that's why we came down here. And it was fabulous. You know, we sort of moved down here when I was younger, and I've just had fond memories ever since.
Having parents that are involved in running a pub, did they have you helping out around the place?
Oh, I think, well, I originally lived in Minehead when I was really, really little, before I was Mablethorpe, and that was fabulous. And I remember I used to ask all the people in the pub when I was really, really young for money for the jukebox. And I always used to put on Shakin' Stevens, because I was obsessed with Shakin' Stevens when I was younger. So, you know, really happy memories there, because I just used to sort of have banter with the customers even at that age, I think. So
your parents that we're talking about, this is Lynn and Rob.
Yes.
They adopted you as a child. What did they tell you about what they went through to adopt you?
Oh, it's such a lovely story. So they adopted me when I was 3 months old, and they've had me ever since. They both still live in Taunton. My mum and dad are both separated and remarried now. So I have my stepmum, Lynn, and yes, my mum and stepmum have the same name, Lynn. And my stepdad, Graham. You know, they were on the adoption list for about 11 years, and they suddenly got a message just saying, oh, you know, there's a baby ready for you 2 days before. And this was when the manic sort of thing happened around Minehead, where they had to run around and get prams and all sorts of baby stuff in the matter of 2 days. And then they picked me up, and then they've had me since. But they were absolutely delighted, because they had own personal issues where they couldn't have their own sort of biological children. So, like I say, they're on the adoption list for 11 years, and they ended up with me.
And when did you find out from them that they were your adoptive parents?
I've known all my life. They've brought me up knowing since I was a child, so it was no shock at all. And I mean, there are some funny stories with my mum, though. She said when she picked me up, she wasn't quite sure if there was something wrong with me because it turned out I had wind, but I was pulling some really seriously funny faces at her. But she soon realised that I was a normal baby, I think. So, you know, they brought me up my whole life always knowing that I was adopted. So it was never really an issue. When I was 18, they even helped me trace my biological parents. So I did that when I was 18 for my biological mum, Anne, in she lived in Paignton. And Paignton, where I was actually, that's where I was actually born. And then a couple of years later, I traced my biological father, Richard, who lived in Sheffield.
Did you always know that you wanted to trace them? Did you go through various emotions towards your biological parents as you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it's quite an emotional thing, really, because, you know, like when I was at school, I used to have like little Saturday jobs and things like that. And then if a woman come in looking a little bit like me, I'd be like, oh, my goodness, is that my biological mum? You know, who's that? Have I got a brother? Have I got a sister? And these things were going through my mind. So for me, it was a no brainer when I was 18. As soon as I could, I wanted to know where I came from, if I had any brothers or sisters. And that's what I did. Because I'd always known that I was adopted, we had a some information which we could write a letter to an old address, and a woman accidentally opened it, and then she passed it on to the relevant people, which was my biological mum's mum, which meant I could get in contact with her. So, you know, it's all, I've always known about it, always just wanted to go for it.
Once you had sort of established an understanding of who your biological parents were, did you play out scenarios in your head, just kind of, well, what's it going to be like, and are they going to want a relationship with me? And did you have a lot of what ifs going around?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you've ever seen that program, Long Lost Family. It's a bit like that. It can be, it's very emotional. But the main thing for me, I think, was finding out if I had any siblings. That was a really, really important thing for me, because I always wanted a brother or sister when I was growing up, and it was just me. So that was a real special moment when I found out I had a half brother and sister on my mum's side. And then on my dad's side, I had another half brother. So it was fantastic. But yeah, you get these emotions. And I guess when I traced them as well, I did have a moment where I was like, well, hang on a minute, you know, why did you give me up? You know, I had all these questions and I wanted to know why everything happened, you know, and all my, you know, all my questions were answered.
And so how did you eventually meet them?
So it's going back to when I was 18. It was just after my 18th birthday, actually. My biological mum, Anne, came with her partner of then, Rick, and they were invited to the house. So they come over to the house in Taunton, and we met up. And then I did that sort of first, and then I went down to stay in Paignton, and that's when I met my half-brother and sister, and then just had a relationship from then on. And with my biological dad, I was living in Bournemouth at the time, because it was a couple of years older when I was 21, and we met up at a hotel there, and that was like really weird, because it's like, no way, this is so strange. And it was great, and we went out for a meal, but it's kind of, you kind of sat there like looking at them thinking, you look like me, this is really weird. And you know, look, we've got the same hands, or we've got the same sort of hobbies, or there's so much the same, or you know, it's weird. If you haven't been brought up with them your whole life, it is quite fascinating when you see them for the first time, because you notice how much sort of physically, you know, the genes run through and you look like them. It's quite mad.
And how has having two sets of parents affected your adult life?
It's been really, really good. I have a 9-year-old daughter, Kira. I mean, it did get complicated at Christmas and birthdays and things like that, because she was littered with presents because she had so many grandparents. It was brilliant. When I got married 6 years ago, they were all at the wedding. So, you know, it was fantastic that I did meet them. But sadly, they passed away over the last year. So my biological mum sadly passed away 2 weeks before Christmas in 2019, because she lost her hard battle with cancer. And then sadly, my biological dad, Richard, passed away 2 days before Christmas last year to COVID. So it's been quite a sad year. But what I've done is pushed through and tried to do something positive with these negatives. And we've got all these beautiful memories of them. So it's like I've just completed 100 swims for charity at Nuffield Health in Taunton. And that's in memory of both of my biological parents. And I've raised over £600. So I'm keeping strong and just, you know, I did a lot of helping out people within the community with getting things they needed with COVID while COVID was done. I've done a lot of things in their memory. So I feel that, you know, their memory will live on in a nice way.
I want to talk a little bit about pageants, and you're relatively new to the world of pageants, I suppose. You've only been doing them for the last 5 years. So can you paint me a picture of your life before you got into competing?
Yeah. If you'd asked me 6 years ago if I was doing pageants when I'm in my late 30s and 40s, I'd have been like, no way, absolutely no chance. This is just nothing that's ever going to happen to me. So before I was doing pageants, my daughter was young. You know, she's 9 now, so I've been doing them 5 years. So, you know, it's just all the early sort of that sort of age, isn't it, where you're just being a mum, just working, you know, preparing the wedding, because we were meant to get married and then Kira come along and we delayed that. So it's just all doing those bits and pieces. And my friend Sarah, who's the current Miss Atlantic UK, she did Galaxy, which is the one I'm competing in 2 weeks. And I seen how fabulous it was and how much money you can raise for a charity that was obviously close to my heart at that point, because my biological mother was diagnosed with cancer. She was, you know, fighting that battle for 10 years. So, you know, the charity was really important to me. And I thought, actually, why not? But I'm not going to lie and tell you how I actually applied, because I thought I'm maybe too old for this, or, you know, can I really do this? I'm a mum, you know, I've got curves, you know, I've got wobbly bits after having a baby. And then I was like, actually, do you know what? I'm just going to go for it. And my best friend Ben came over for the night and we had a couple of drinks. And I was like, yay, I'm going to apply for the pageant. And to be honest, I think that was a bit of Dutch courage. And I got a reply back a couple of days later saying, yo, you're through to the final. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, I couldn't quite believe it. I thought, oh, I'm going to represent Somerset at Galaxy UK. So it started there. And the first time I didn't know what I was doing. I kind of like turned up, didn't know what outfits to wear, what you're meant to do. Had this sort of really, what people might perceive it to be as, oh, everyone's going to be slim, everyone's going to be, you know, flawless and all this. And I turned up and I was just so surprised at how it was. You know, there's women there from, you know, slimmer women to maybe size 20 plus women. There was girls that were younger, women that were over 40, women in their 50s. And it just opened my eyes, because the diversity there was insane. It was just like there's so many different types of women from all over the UK competing for this pageant. And I absolutely fell in love with it, and it's been going from then.
Aside from the charity angle, was there a part of you that thought, actually, you know, as you said, with being a mum and planning a wedding and all that other stuff, was there an element of it for you that was, actually, this is something which I can do, and it's about me, and it's about me kind of expressing who I am, I suppose?
Yes, definitely. There was that part of, you know, really sort of getting my confidence back, because after I had a child, I put on 5.5 stone, which was quite a lot. And I did lose it for the wedding. But I think after the wedding was just shortly after I started doing pageants, I thought, you know, I want to keep this weight off. I want to keep looking nice. I want to feel young. I want to, you know, I just want to do something for myself. Because like I say, when children are young, when you're a mum, you're running around here, running around everywhere, doing the school runs, you're doing this, that and the other. And it was, I mean, I absolutely love bling. So all these glittery dresses and all these amazing outfits obviously appealed to me, because I'm like a magpie. So I absolutely love all that. But it was just the charity aspect and just, yeah, doing something for me and building my own confidence up again. Because some women go through this. I suffered with a little bit of postnatal depression after I had Kira. Didn't quite feel myself, because your body changes. I changed shape. I got older. You know, you're suddenly a mum. And to be honest, when I started doing pageants, it brought me back. It made me, it's something for me and I enjoy it. Made loads of new friends and just you know, it just does so much for your confidence.
You mentioned previously about thinking that it would be a certain type of woman who would be competing in the pageants. What kind of other preconceptions, I suppose, did you have about what it might be like?
I think that was the main one, but I do know that there are preconceptions of pageants, like ones that I've heard of, for instance, is, you know, that, yeah, definitely that you couldn't do them when you're older, if you're older. You know, you can't do them if you're a mum. You have to look a certain way. You know, the girls aren't very nice and they don't get on. I've heard that one. And then, you know, and there's a really weird one that the girls do laugh about is you're not meant to wear green, but actually quite a lot of girls win in green. I don't know what that one's about, but it's just so opposite to what a lot of people think. And they see it, I guess, some people as maybe pretty girls getting up on stage and they don't see the bigger picture of what it does to their confidence or how much they're helping the community. I mean, it's like myself, I've done over 150 hours volunteering for St. Margaret's Hospice, and I've done firewalks for them. I do so much around the community. I help out. And people may think that pageants is just, you know, getting up on stage in a pretty dress and not doing much for everybody. But actually, if you look at what a lot of these women do behind the scenes, there's a lot more work to it than people think.
And so what does an actual competition entail?
Okay, so this is where I got it so wrong the first time. The competition, I mean, you can make it whatever you want to be, actually. So you'd have your entrance fee, you'd go in, often you get that sponsored. So you find sponsors is what you do at first. And then you do local appearances in your community and raise for charities of your choice and the chosen charity of the pageant. You normally get your sash a year before, so you've got a year of work to do. So basically, just for instance, this year I've done 160 appearances. An appearance can consist of taking a donation to a charity shop, donating to a food bank. You know, next week I'm doing the Christmas, you know, helping along with the Christmas lights, doing charity events, you know, firewalks, skydives. All these things can count as an appearance. You know, when I've done the opening of the Heart Trail in Taunton with the mayor and Go Create, that will count as an appearance. So it's actually doing things in your local community and helping or raising money for different charities or donating. Also, what could count as an appearance is going to support other girls at other pageants. So you travel up and down the UK. So that's quite a, you know, big thing, going to support everyone and doing a lot of miles. So that's just the appearance side of things. Then you have to get prepared for the stage. So you have to get prepared for your interview, and you have to have an evening wear, opening round, fashion wear and swimwear. So you have to have all those outfits in place and shoes you can walk in. So, and you just try and enjoy your year, and the friends that you make is absolutely fantastic. But it's all about your own personal goals. You make it what you want to make out of it, you know. But it's like this year, I've, you know, 160 appearances is working hard, and I've raised an awful lot for charity. I think I've just gone over £10,000 now for different charities altogether.
And it must be harder, I suppose, doing appearances and getting out there into the community over the last couple of years when we have had restrictions.
Yes, definitely. So a woman of my age has actually learned how to use technology. So over the last year, what I've done is done loads of virtual appearances. So I created Pageants Got Talent, where people sent their videos in, and we'll talk a little bit about this later for the forthcoming charity single, you know, done online raffles, for instance. And every week I'm part of the Pageantland team, and I interview a girl every single week, a pageant girl, and they get to talk about their story, their platforms, their aim with the pageant, what pageant they're in, why they've entered it. So I get to chat to someone live on Facebook every single week. It is what you make it. Like I say, I did loads of online campaigns for the British Heart Foundation. My platform is Heart Health Awareness. You know, I got over 50, 60 girls to make their, you know, hands into a heart shape, just to make people aware of looking after their hearts, because that's a big thing, because obviously people are putting on weight in lockdown. It's just a bit about heart health and how to look after your heart, which is really sort of accelerating my platform. Even in lockdown, I've got into talks with people to be putting defibrillators in the local community, hopefully in the allotment. So this has all been done from home. So I think it, like I say, it is what you make it. I didn't want to let coronavirus or the COVID-19 pandemic stop me from doing what I wanted to do best. I mean, I even walked around town in a ball gown for the NHS. There was no one in town apart from a police car that waved at us and thought we were doing a great job. Me and my daughter walked around in ball gowns, just raised a small amount, just doing a lap around town in a ball gown, £60 for the NHS, you know, just things like that. And I've just kept going throughout lockdown.
One of the things that you open yourself up to when you do more activity online is, you know, definitely people being supportive, but you also open yourself up to criticism. And I know that there are numbers of people who would be very anti the pageant world. Is that something that you've experienced as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to touch wood here. But I actually haven't experienced any sort of nasty comments online. But I am aware that pageantry isn't for everybody. So, you know, it's one of those things. But I think if I did experience any negative comments, I just wouldn't take it to heart, because everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And I know in my heart that I'm me. I'm not going to change. And, you know, I know I'm a good person. So if people do not like pageantry and what it stands for, then that's entirely down to them. Everyone's got a personal choice. You know, so I'm not keen on snooker, but I don't sort of voice that very often. But, you know, that's really not for me. But, you know, like I say, we're all different. Everybody's different. And we've all got our own hobbies and our own likes. So
as someone who is kind of in the older ranks of competitors, is there a mentoring and looking after of younger competitors that you do as well?
No, not really. I mean, like I say, everyone's a team, but everything's divided into categories. So you've got the young ones, the little misses, the preteens, and they all sort of, everybody helps each other. But I mean, some people have coaches, pageant coaches and things like that. But, you know, everyone just sort of works as a team. It doesn't really matter what age you are, you know, so everybody gets on as a team. There's lots of amazing mums in pageantry. Pageant mums are the best ever, that look after their children. And they sort us out, actually, the older ones, the Ms and the Misses. The pageant mums are so much fun. They're always there. Like if you need something to eat or if you want a sneaky drink or something like that, they are so amazing. So I would say that they are, you know, they're the sneaky ones behind the background that are always looking after everyone.
So tell me what's happening at the end of this month with regards to competitions.
Okay, so at the end of the month, it is the UK Galaxy Final. It did get held back this year because of the coronavirus. It's normally in March every year. The last one took part last March, literally about a week before lockdown. So that was very, very tense. It was, is it happening? Is it not? Is it happening? Is it not? But it did go ahead. So I'll be going up to Chorley with my family, and I will be competing in the Misses category. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's my fifth time doing it. I was first runner up last year, and last year I took home Mrs. Publicity and Best Interview. So I am hoping to win this year. But like I say, even if I don't, I do not need a crown to know how much good I've done this year.
So you won Best Interview last year, and I've done some Googling of pageant questions. So I thought maybe just to like give you a bit of a practice, a warm up in advance, I can ask you some pageant questions. How do you feel about that?
Amazing.
Okay. So this is just ones I found off the internet. If you were God for a day, how would you change the world?
Oh my goodness. These are not real pageant questions. This is like... That would never get asked in an interview. This is where like Googling pageant questions might not be like...
It's not accurate, is it?
That sounds like a world peace one, you know, which it's definitely not, that's what it's not like. So
maybe it's an American one. I don't know.
It could be American. Yeah. It's definitely not how we roll in the UK.
Okay.
Try another one.
I'll try another one. It's probably still American. If you could break one rule, what rule would that be?
If you break one rule, oh, I feel naughty now. I feel like I've got to do something. Do you know what? I haven't got a clue. So I'm like a good girl, aren't I? No, let me think about this. I don't know. I'm a very good citizen. And I don't know. I'm just trying to think. I haven't got a clue. These are really bizarre questions.
I've given you like bizarre interviews. questions. They probably were like American ones that you will never get asked.
Yeah, because they normally ask stuff like, you know, does the crown need you or do you need the crown? You know, ooh, stuff like that.
How would you answer that one?
Well, I would say the crown needs me because of all the hard work I do, and I could be a good role model in society, and I'm always a happy face for people to come and speak to, and yeah, you know. But I still want to know where these pageant questions come from. That's brilliant.
You mentioned earlier on about having more activity online and doing more things like videos, etc. You've launched your own YouTube channel where you talk to other women competing in pageants. Can you tell me a bit more about how you set that up and what you're looking to achieve through that?
Okay, so yes, so I do the Pageantland YouTube channel where I chat to a different girl every week about their own pageant journeys, talk about their platforms and things like that. But I also did my own YouTube channel, Crowning Beats. This channel was set up originally because I wanted to combine my platform and my music. So Crowning Beats made sense because a heart beats as well. So to start with, I put up the Pageants Got Talent auditions and things like that, which is just a bit of fun. So you can see everyone sending in their videos and having a laugh. And then I decided to do a 6-part mini series chatting to people that have a similar platform regarding heart health. I also spoke to women that have got heart conditions and another woman that's getting defibrillators in a local community, and just really wanted to have a chat to these women about heart health and what can be done about it and the work that they've done with the British Heart Foundation and the research and everything. Also for this channel, I did another little mini series talking to women over 40 that started doing pageants at the age of over 40. One of them started at 50 years old. It was brilliant. So again, another little series just to get an insight on women who compete in pageants over 40. And that's, you know, that's great. The other thing I'm going to be using on the channel, I'm about to release a 8-minute documentary, little mini documentary about myself and about the work I've done in Somerset, just telling my little story, which has been filmed by a local filmmaker, Jack Turner. So he's just done that for me. So that is coming out very, very soon. In fact, this week. So I'm really looking forward to that.
When you do talk to women over 40 who are competing, do you find that there are similar things which are motivating them to get involved in pageants?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think a lot of it boils down to confidence. You know, they've done the mum thing. They've, you know, their figure's changed, you know. They've got a bit older and they're like, oh, you know, they've come to this point in their life where they're kind of like, okay, I'm at a sort of crossroads. You know, what am I going to do with myself? So some might have had a child leave home and then their life, not going to call it like a midlife crisis, but they're like, actually, let's do something different. Let's do something powerful. Let's do something really empowering as women. And, you know, just have that confidence to go on stage. I mean, like I say, some of these women that are in their 50s that get up on stage in swimwear, for instance, and, you know, that does take some, you know, proper confidence to do that. It's something I never thought I would do years ago. And, you know, they can raise money for charities and you make so many friends. I think we're all there for the same reason, as just to, you know, put the good into the community, raise money for charities, and also just keep our confidence going, make ourselves feel young. I mean, why, you know, go and sit down the bingo hall just yet? I'll be doing that when I'm a little bit older, but not quite now.
Obviously, not everyone going through that sort of life stage will... Sorry, I'm going to start again. Obviously, not everyone going through that life stage will want to compete in pageants. What do you think are the principles for maintaining or rebuilding that self-confidence as you get older that, you know, maybe you can gain from without having to go forward and compete in a pageant?
well, this is it. Going back to what I said earlier, it's like each person's got their own individual sort of hobby or things that they like to do. So, you know, some people might gain their confidence. They might take up a sport. Say some people might start body pump at the gym or swimming, or they're all doing their own different things in life. And I just think you've got to do what personally makes you happy. And I've just found that doing pageants was for me personally, but it might not be for, you know, my friend down the road, you know, that's the same age. Like, for instance, my best friend, she lives in Street, and you know, as she's got older, what she loves to do is just get as many animals as possible. So she loves guinea pigs, cats, rabbits, and they like to breed cats and do things. And that's her thing. And like I say, everybody's got their own hobbies and their own sort of things that make them motivated.
You mentioned the swimming challenge that you recently completed. That was, what, about 50 miles of swimming or something along those lines?
Yeah, it was just under 70, actually, in the end. that was obviously to support my platform of heart health awareness. Like a lot of us did, I put on quite a bit of weight in lockdown. Obviously, that's not good for your heart, so obviously wanted to make sure that I got myself healthy. So I love swimming. So as soon as the pool opened up again, I was like, right, I'm going to go swimming. I enjoy it. And then I thought, well, why not do? Because I do love swimming so much. 100 swims for charity. So that's 50 lengths a time. And then doing that 100 times. Now, I'm not going to lie. When I started it and I was on like 25, 30, I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be easy. This is fine. By the time I got to 80, I was nearly crying at the side of the pool because it is hard work. You know, it's just so incredibly hard and it's tiring. And that's when I did notice kind of that, you know, I was doing everything for school, work, and then getting to the pool and all that after. At points it was so, so hard. But what kept me going is I was doing it in memory of my parents. And I raised, you know, over £600 for the Christie Cancer Charity. So I think it's a really good job. Well done. Nuffield Health were brilliant. They did a tick sheet in reception. So it was brilliant. So every time I went in, there's no getting away with it because I had to sign it and they had to sign it. And I just recently put that tick sheet up on Instagram so everybody can see that I actually did it. That's like I think I'm going to frame it. But it was challenging, but I think it was a challenge I set myself out just before we opened up again in lockdown. And I think it was a really good challenge because it was it got me healthy again. Also, it's raised some money for a well-deserved charity.
Going up and down, doing all those lengths, what was on your mind while you were swimming?
Oh, this is just hilarious, right? I've thought about this before. Honestly, the amount of stuff that I've thought about, you know, what we're going to get for shopping this week. Oh, I'm going to cook this. Or I'd be writing lyrics for dance tracks in my head in the pool. Or, you know, you kind of like get to the point of like pushing yourself on. In my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, you can do it. Come on, girl. So I also made loads and loads of friends in the pool. There was regular swimmers there that sort of see my journey, and some of them donated. I met in the pool, and, you know, you've got your regulars there that might be sort of, I don't know, 5:30 on a Tuesday night, and they'd go every Tuesday. So you'd see like lots of similar faces, you know, familiar faces. And yeah, all the people there have been so supportive. But yeah, you do think of some very strange things when you're swimming on your own, definitely.
You had previously mentioned your music and the single that's coming up as well. What can you tell me about that?
I've been a singer-songwriter for dance music for over 10 years. That's how I actually met my husband, because he was a DJ. So we met in a club and it went from there. We do write music together. So we have a studio in our house and we often write dance tracks together. And then in lockdown, I wanted to do something a bit different because this hasn't actually been done in pageantry before. The fact that someone's made a charity single featuring pageant girls, nobody's done that before. So I wanted to just think outside the box and put my two hobbies together. So on the way back from the final last year, I was driving along in the car, 5-hour journey home. Again, lots of times to think about stuff. And I pulled over, service station, and thought, you know, I'll turn my voice note on. And then I left that playing for a bit, and I was just sort of singing ideas and lyrics into the voice note. And then by the time I got home, I'd made my mind up that I was doing this charity single. So I wrote all the lyrics. A friend helped produce it. And then there were 7 girls featured in total. So it's the Winners of Pageants Got Talent. So we've got Miss Great Britain, it's always on ITV and stuff like that. You always see her about Jen Atkin and Kat Henry, who's the new Miss Great Britain, and a few other girls that do various different pageants. They come to the studio after lockdown. And just recorded the vocals. My husband helped record the vocals, and then the charity single was born and done. My friend Jack Turner, who has done my little documentary, has also put together a little music video with pictures and things like that. Not a proper one yet, because as of coronavirus, we can't do a proper video just yet. Next year, definitely. So the charity single is finished and finalized, and a little teaser of it will be going up in the next week or so. And then it'll be available to buy on iTunes and things like that. And all the money is going towards the Christie Cancer Charity.
You're obviously someone who's hugely busy and always thinking about what's next. So what else is on your radar right now?
Well, my friend is trying to convince me to abseil down a building in Somerset. I'm just at the moment, and that's next June. So watch this space. I bet you I'll end up doing it, but I'm absolutely petrified of heights. I still don't know how I did a skydive. If not, definitely I'd love to do another skydive. I did one for the British Heart Foundation. I raised over £550. I did that at Dunk as well, which is locally. And it was absolutely fantastic. It was a real, real kind of daring thing to do. But again, I'm always open to new ideas, and watch this space. I could just decide to do something random, you know. I'll do something new.
Dion, we're now going to play Somerset Who's Who, which is the game where I'm going to give you the names of people with a Somerset connection and 2 different identities, one of which is real and the other is entirely made up. And you have to tell me which you think is their real identity.
Okay.
So we have 5 names, and for each of them, I will tell you the name and then 2 identities, and then you can make your guess.
Sounds good to me.
So your first name is Simon Saunders. So is Simon Saunders A, an award-winning music video director, or B, the owner of the Ariel Motor Company?
I don't even know. It's Simon Saunders. I'm going to go with B.
It is B.
Yay!
Okay, good start. Your next name is Harriet Ackland. So is Harriet Ackland, or was Harriet Ackland, A, a noblewoman celebrated for her bravery during the American Revolution, or B, a cross-country runner who holds the course record for the Quantock Beast Race?
I'm going to go for B.
It's A.
I'm not very good at history.
Okay, well, the next one is Sir William Ackland. So was Sir William Ackland A, an admiral in the Royal Navy in the early 1900s, or B, a former Supreme Court judge?
Oh, A?
It is A.
Yeah.
Right, number 4 is George Hennett. So was George Hennett A, a former mayor of Axbridge, or B, the engineer who was responsible for the lighthouse at Watchet Harbour?
Oh. Okay, B.
It is B.
Had to think about that then.
I'm doing well. So it's 3 out of 4 so far. On to the last one. Your last name is Clara Grant. So was Clara Grant A, a historian and author known for her works on the Industrial Revolution, or B, a social reformer and pioneer of children's education?
Oh. I'll go for A.
It's B, unfortunately.
Do you know what? I was going to say B, and then I was like, no, I doubted myself. You shouldn't do that. You should always go with your gut instinct, shouldn't you?
But 3 out of 5 isn't bad.
No, that's not too bad. That's over half right. I'm happy with that.
Before we go, where can people find out more about you and the work that you're doing?
So you can find me on social media. I'm on Facebook as Mrs. Somerset Galaxy. Also on Instagram as Mrs. Somerset Galaxy. I have my YouTube channel, which is Crowning Beats. So that is the best place to find out all of the charity work and bits and pieces that I'll be doing.
Dionne, thank you so much for your time. It's been a delight talking to you.
It's been lovely to talk to you. It's fabulous. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Somerset Stories. If you liked it, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on social media at Somerset Stories or email hello@somersetstories.com. Music on all Somerset Stories productions is created by Jazar. You can be found at betterwithmusic.com. See you next time.